In 1945, the Labour Party won the election easily and became, for the first time, a majority government. At a time when everybody expected massive social change. But also at a time when Britain didn't have any money. They spent it all on the war. So let's have a look at what happens. This period, 1945 to 1951, is considered even today to be the golden age of the Labour Party. If you meet people from the Labour Party and you say, tell me something you are proud of, and they will talk about 1945 to 1950 and the things which were established then, which are still the case today. But to understand the Labour government of 1945, we need to go back a little bit. The Labour Party, 1931 to 45. Something which is sometimes a little difficult but necessary is it's important to look at political parties when they are not the government. Because when they are not the government, they are thinking, how can we become the government again? What will we do when we're in government? What are the best theories? What is the best way of understanding the world? Who are the forces we can mobilise? There's a lot of thinking in every political party when they're not yet the government. And I think when you're studying history, I think it's very important not to be cynical. Of course, it's very popular today to think, oh, well, all politicians are only interested in themselves. And I think if you begin from there, it's impossible to understand history. It's better to assume people's good faith and see how their theory works. Well, you don't have to agree with them, but they're probably doing things for a reason. So let's go back before what was happening in the Labour Party in 1945. Well, remember the history. The first Labour government was in 1924. It lasted a few months only. Only a few months. It was a minority government. So they couldn't do very much. There were a few reforms, especially about housing, but it was not considered to be a great success. Nevertheless, the people in the Labour Party could say in 1925, 1926, okay, we didn't do a lot, but we were a minority government. When we have a majority, things will be much better. Also, because the Labour Party had never been a proper government, people had a tremendously positive vision of what they would do. People really believed that the first Labour government would transform society forever. Because it was normal. They'd never the Labour government then is the Labour Party is a party based on the trade unions, based on organisations of working people, and most members of the Labour Party believed that they could completely transform the world, or certainly the government, if they were the government. So expectations were very, very high. In 1929. The Labour Party formed the government again, led by Ramsay MacDonald. And, of course, for whatever reason, so the first majority Labour government was in 1929, but something else happened in 1929. The biggest economic crisis in the history of the world. Manque de bol. Yeah? What was the result? The result was that 2 years later, in 1931, the Labour Party leader, Ramsay MacDonald, abandoned the Labour Party and formed a government with the Conservatives called the National Government. This was the lowest point for the Labour Party. From the point of view of the Labour Party, this was the lowest point of their history. Our first majority government in 1929. Now we can change things. And 2 years later, our leader, our hero, he was a real hero, Ramsay MacDonald, he has gone to join the Conservatives to make he has been expelled from the Labour Party and joined the Conservatives to form a national government which was very hard on the trade unions, very hard on the unemployed and so on. So it was a disaster. and the, just one moment, the people around the Labour Party says, your wonderful Labour Party idea, not very good, is it? 2 years later, your hero joins the Conservatives. This is, you know, there is, the Labour Party is finished. Many people believed in 1931. Forget it, it's the end. Yeah, we have the first majority Labour government, and 2 years later, our hero joins the Conservatives and forms a very harsh government. It's not very good. Yeah? Yeah, I answered it. Good, so that's great. It's good. Oh, I'm pretty smart, you know. So that's the very, very bad situation. So what happened after 1931? After 1931, the different leaders of the Labour Party said, what can we do? We had our majority government, but with the economic crisis, yeah, with all the conflicts that involved, we didn't find a solution. And our leader left us to join the Conservatives. It's very bad. You know, what should we do? There were three reactions. A small group of people, a small group of activists, abandoned Labour and joined the right. Ramsay MacDonald joined the Conservative with the Conservatives for the national government. Oswald Mosley, who was in the Labour Party, left the Labour Party. And after a few years, will found the British Union of Fascists. Yeah? So he's abandoned the idea of he believes that it was impossible. He formed he was a minister in the 1929 governments, and he defended Keynesian economic policies. And he resigned. He wasn't there very long. He resigned, and he formed a new party called the New Party. C'est vrai, il a formé un nouveau parti qui s'appelait le Nouveau Parti. The New Party in 1930. When he met Mussolini in 1932, he returned to England and formed the British Union of Fascists. In 1934, he was organising attacks on Jewish parts of town. Yeah? Mosley. M-O-S. Yes, important point. Mosley, Oswald Mosley. And his British Union of Fascists imitated Mussolini. Their supporters had uniforms, the Hitler salutes, etc. He had some success. He gave his meetings in football stadiums. He could fill a football stadium. And very successful in 1933, 1934. In 1936... I will come back to this. No, I won't come back to this. This was 1936. In 1936, he was stopped by a very, very big demonstration against the fascists. In 1936, Oswald Mosley said, "We are going to have a freedom march across the east of London, the Jewish part of London." So a very provocative, c'est un peu comme si Le Pen disait, "Bon, on va faire une manifestation à Barbès." Yeah? Une provocation. J'espère que ça va rester rigolo plusieurs années. Ils sont capables, hein, à un moment. Yeah. Okay. In any case, the local population and the communists all joined together, and the fascists decided to go home instead, and the British Union of Fascists never recovered from that. So this was the first possibility. The Labour Party disaster in 1931. One possibility, just for a small group, was to abandon Labour and move to the right. Second possibility, abandon Labour and move to the left. Here are a couple of examples of people who, for example, joined the Communist Party. These are three examples of people who moved to the left. John Strachey joined the Communist Party in 1931 and wrote a series of books, The Coming Struggle for Power, La Lutte pour le Pouvoir, The Theory and Practice of Socialism, He will change later, but in this period he is a communist. Sidney and Beatrice Webb, they go to Russia in 1932, and they come back and they write a book, Soviet Communism and New Civilization, an extremely positive view of Stalinist Russia. So that was one of the elements. However, there were problems about this, because at this time Stalinism in Russia is becoming extremely repressive and forcing through an industrial revolution, a very violent industrial revolution at great cost to people. But that's not really the subject of my class. And finally, the Independent Labour Party. Now, the Independent Labour Party is a political organisation, and for a long time it is inside the Labour Party. The Labour Party are une organisation assez floue où d'autres organisations peuvent s'affilier. And so the Independent Labour Party, en fait, is a section of the Labour Party, but in 1932 they leave Labour and they become an independent party. En fait, ils s'appellent Independent Labour Party, mais ils sont indépendants pas toujours. Jusqu'en 32, de 24 à 32, ils font partie du Parti travailliste. Et en 32, ils quittent parce qu'ils disent, bon, ils sont trop à droite, so they become the Independent Labour Party. The ILP. No. John Strachey becomes a communist. Sidney and Beatrice Webb become communists, and the ILP leaves the Labour Party. So these are three examples of people or groups who abandon Labour to the left. The third option is to stay inside the Labour Party and try to develop a new solution. Yeah. So what is the problem? The problem is that in 1929 there was a Labour government and they did not succeed in doing what they wanted to do. And so the solution is to find new policies. And there are three groups inside the Labour Party. So these are the people who did not leave the Labour Party, who stayed inside the Labour Party and tried to renew the Labour Party. And here are three groups. These are three groups. The Socialist League, the XYZ Club, and the New Fabian Research Bureau. Now, a name is never innocent. Which one of these groups do you imagine was most interested in demonstrations, strikes, organising on the streets? The first one. Socialist League, yeah, League, let's do so, yeah. If you organise a political group and you call it the XYZ Club, it means you're not interested in attracting a lot of people. It's a club, it's a sort of closed thing, yeah. And the New Fabian Research Bureau, they are people who think the problem, the problem is identifying the problem. For the Socialist League, the problem is mobilisation. We need more demonstrations, more strikes, more mass action. For the New Fabian Research Bureau, the problem is we need more research. We need more experts. The Labour government had a problem because we didn't have enough economic experts. And the XYZ Club is somewhere between the two. So different sections of the Labour Party have a different analysis of what is the problem and therefore what is the solution. The Socialist League is, the problem is, the Labour government did not support the workers enough. And the solution is more trade unions, more strikes, more demonstrations, more action. The New Fabian Research Bureau says the problem is the Labour government did not have good economic experts. And the solution is to have better economic experts. So very different view of what the problem is and what the solution is. They write different... Let's have a look at the last one. the New Fabian Research Bureau write a series of pamphlets to explain what they think should be Labour policy. In 1934, they write, for socialism and peace. In 1937, they write, Labour's immediate programme. And Labour's immediate programme is a book which gives a list of important changes which they think should be made immediately. They say, if the Labour Party becomes the government, they should nationalise the Bank of England. They should nationalise the land, nationalisation de la terre, the railways, the electricity and gas, and so on. And most of these suggestions about nationalisations become part of the election programme of Labour in 1945. So in 1945, the Labour Party has recovered a little bit. During the war, some Labour Party members were ministers. It was a national coalition government. And so the Labour Party could say, we helped to win the war. Now vote for us. Why should I vote for you? Well, remember the Conservatives in 1939, 1938, 1937. Unemployment, poverty, crisis, bad conditions. Don't forget that. That's the Conservatives. We are the Labour. We will make things different. And the Labour Party promised big changes. What did the Conservative Party say? Well, the Conservative Party relied on Winston Churchill's personal prestige. And he attacked socialism in his speeches. This is what he said, Churchill. I will go farther. I declare to you from the bottom of my heart that no socialist system can be established without a political police. Many of those who are advocating socialism or voting socialist today will be horrified at this idea. That is because they are short-sighted. No socialist government could afford to allow free public discontent. They would have to fall back on some form of Gestapo, no doubt very humanely directed in the first instance. So Churchill's argument was, if you vote for the socialists, it is nearly fascism. Yeah? You will see there is a form of Gestapo and so on. This did not convince people. People were really interested in the welfare state, which had been promised by Beveridge and so on. In Churchill's speech, he said, there are five things we must do. We must finish the war with Japan, demobilise the soldiers, restart industry, rebuild exports, and think about food, work and homes. But that was not the priorities of the people. Number five, food, work and homes. That was the priority. And so Labour won massively. The Labour won 393 seats and the Conservatives 213. So the vote of members of the army was very strongly for Labour. And the new Labour government had a very different atmosphere. Clement Attlee, the Prime Minister, arrived at Buckingham Palace to see the Queen in a cheap car, which his wife was driving. Normally they would send a Rolls Royce to take the Prime Minister to see the Queen. No, completely new atmosphere. In the House of Commons, they sang the Labour Party song, The Red Flag. Yeah, the people's flag is deepest red, it's shrouded after Armada dead, etc. Yeah, completely different atmosphere. In the Labour government, of the 37 ministers, 8 of them are minors. Huit des ministres, c'était des mineurs de fond avant. So a different atmosphere, yeah? The traditional conservative minister was a duke or or a member of an aristocratic family. Yeah? So a very, very big change there. Labour is in power. And the first thing they do is to introduce a series of nationalisations. The Bank of England, civil aviation, les avions, radio, coal, railways, electricity, gas, iron and steel. The biggest wave of nationalisations which had ever been seen in Britain. Nevertheless, the meaning of nationalisation was very controversial. First of all, if you look at the question, why nationalisation? Inside the Labour Party, there are two different opinions. On the left of the Labour Party, we are nationalising today the Bank of England and the coal because capitalism is very bad and we are beginning a new system. First of all, we will nationalise the coal and the railway, but our aim is to abolish capitalism and to have democratic control of all industry. Profit and market, we are not interested in profit, we are not interested in the market. These nationalisations are the beginning of a revolutionary change, a slow revolutionary change. We want to abolish capitalism. And other people inside the Labour Party said, no. We want to nationalise the railways, we want to nationalise coal in order to make British industry more efficient, in order to help British private capitalist industry, because capitalism is good, but it needs structure. We need national transport because it works better. But the most dynamic element of the economy is the private sector capitalism. So inside the same party, the same policy, you have two different reasons for why we're doing it. And in general, in the election manifesto, the argument given was efficiency. This is the election manifesto. Each industry must have applied to it the test of national service. If it serves the nation, well and good. If it is inefficient and falls down on the job, the nation must see that things are put right. L'idée, c'est qu'on va nationaliser les industries en inefficace. But the left wing, a lot of the members of the Labour Party said, no. Nationalisation is the beginning of a complete change. Second question, how do you nationalise? Different opinions. On the left of the Labour Party, take the mines and the railways. These are private companies. The left of the Labour Party said, the railways were built by workers, the mines were dug by workers, so really they belong to workers. The capitalists have stolen them. So we nationalise them. That's the end of the story. No compensation. The right of the Labour Party says, no. What we want to do is we want to buy the railways from the private companies and we're going to buy the railways from the mines from the private companies. And this was what was established. The private owners did not have a choice. The private owners of the railways were obliged to sell their railways to the government, but they got a good price for them. So that was the how. Second question, what do you do with a nationalised industry? When you have a nationalised railway industry or a nationalised coal industry, civil aviation, on the left said, we want a completely different organisation. We don't want workers and foremen and managers and senior managers and bosses. That's capitalist. We don't want that. We want a democratic organisation. And on the other side, no. The structure must not change. It's just a different... It's nationalised for efficiency reasons. So a big debate there going on. The result was that the structure did remain the same. And in fact, one of the historians said, the gulf between the villa-style housing provided for the management of nationalised coal mines and the traditional terraces where their employees lived remained as wide as ever. That is to say, in the mines, remember there are a million miners. Yeah? Mines, very, very big industry. And in the nationalised mines, traditionally, the workers lived in houses which belonged to the mine. And the managers also lived in houses belonging to the mine. And the miners' houses were very simple, and the managers' houses were very grand. And the historian says, this did not change after nationalisation. So it was a nationalized, but many structures remained the same. Okay, I think that's enough for today. Thank you for listening. 2 hours is a long time. Yeah, you must have a head like that. I know I do. I'll see you next week. Remember, if you were not on the list, go and see the secretary, Béatrice, secrétaire d'anglais, and worry about it. I'll see you next week. Thank you. Did everybody put the name on here? Yep. Yeah.